The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. That's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Question. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm afraid I'm without Barnabas today, so it's just going to be me and a good friend, Rob Cizik, who is an executive pastor at North Shore Christian Church in Seattle. If you don't follow him on Twitter, follow him on Twitter. If you don't read his blog, you should definitely read his blog. It's his name, Robcizik. You put out more quality consistent content than almost anybody I know. It's like you and a guy named Brian Doddridge. I don't know if you know Brian or not.
I do.
But you guys both, it's just uber practical, very quick to apply. And then, of course, I see you a little bit in social anyway at various conferences, and have always just enjoyed. We're usually pulling some of the same stuff, and so I've always wanted to sit down and have a chat with you. So I'm so glad that we're able to do that today. Can you share a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. Well, I just want to say thank you, Todd, for having me. I share the same affinity for your work and everything that happens there at Lifeway. And it's just an honor for me to be on the podcast. So thank you.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your family, what you're currently doing in ministry?
Sure. I'm one of those executive pastors who came from the business world. I worked for quite some time in broadcast TV news as a news producer and news director. And it was really funny how God prepared me to be an executive pastor in that environment where I was dealing with staff, I was dealing with budgets and organizational direction and HR and so many of the things that you deal with as an executive pastor. I was dealing with already in broadcasting. So, you know, I say that because so many people I talk to, they're like, I didn't go to Bible school and I guess I really don't, can't do ministry. And I just, find it really encouraging that God gets us ready for ministry. I hadn't really considered ministry at the time, but God was getting me ready for it. So it's kind of neat to see how he worked and how the church world has been open to the idea of having people with business experience come in and handle more of the business responsibilities in the church. I'm married. I have two kids who just left. My youngest just left for college here a couple of weeks ago. So we are very early empty nesters. I've been here at our church. Our church runs about 1,500 in weekend attendance. We're also very pleased to have a school as part of our ministry where over 1,000 students come each weekday to be part of the campus here. So all of those things conspire to keep me very busy.
Well, that definitely sounds like you're a busy guy. I know in most situations, it always is interesting to me when somebody introduces themselves as an executive pastor, because there is the more traditional sense of the role, which is part of, what you just described. Mm-hmm. And then, recently I met a guy and I was talking to him. He said he was an executive pastor and I start to unravel that a little bit and come to find out it's him and a senior pastor and they just started a church plant. Mm. And I'm like, you may want to it may be fun to call yourself an executive pastor. But you may want to reconsider what your title is, just so the expectations are set there. But yeah, it is a really interesting time in that I feel like roles are dramatically changing. I know, you know, you talked about coming out of the business world. Churches are obviously getting larger and larger, and so many of our people are coming up through the ranks, which is a great thing, but they don't have, you know, formal training. And then the people that do get formal training, that do get seminary training, they are left at a deficit when it comes to some of the day-to-day things, the administrative things, the financial things. So what blows my mind is I'll have one conversation with a guy who is like, oh, they didn't tell me anything in seminary about, you know, how this actually runs, to, mm-hmm. oh, I know how to run a business, but I don't know anything about how to do church. So,
that's what makes, you know, potentially makes a great senior pastor, executive pastor relationship is, you know, for me, I have no desire to be in my senior pastor's business. He is seminary trained. He is a called Bible teacher. He is, you know, compassionate and a shepherd, and he is exactly who you want as the senior pastor. And you know what? He's perfectly happy to me to say, you know what? You got that staff headache? Why don't you go deal with it?
Yep.
You know, hey, you got some budget challenges? You go deal with it. It's fine. Those are my strengths. I like that area. So even though, you know, neither one of us really has a desire to be up in each other's stuff, and it actually works pretty well.
It's interesting to me the relationship between a senior pastor and executive pastor. It's almost like you need there needs to be like a matchmaker for pastors and executive pastors, simply because, you know, if typically they're either a clone of the other person or they're filling mm-hmm. in gaps. And the healthiest relationships I've seen have been when they're filling in gaps, and they have, you know, they have enough overlap to keep them together and moving in the same direction, but their strengths are different so that they can, you know, basically divide and conquer a whole lot easier.
Yeah, it really is a complementary relationship.
Well, let's get into our first question. I'm always excited to ask this. Barnabas gets on me because I'm like, this is my favorite question. He's like, you can't say that. But this is definitely a question I want to ask you. Who are you learning from right now?
Sure. Yeah, I've got a few different sources of inspiration and challenge right now. One of them is Jim Putman. He is the senior pastor of Real Life Ministries in Post Falls, Idaho, and his work with relational discipleship has just been life changing for us as a church. And you know, specifically what he's advocating is not just an education based discipleship, but really looking at Jesus's method, which was to have a 12 and to have a 3 and to really be in life together with that small group. And the idea is that we can't be in right relationship with the Lord unless we're in relationship with each other. And we can't be in right relationship with each other, of course, unless we're in relationship with the Lord. So it's been a very challenging, you know, for somebody who's been used to doing church a certain way for many years. His thinking has just been a challenge for us as a church, for me personally. And then another person is Kerry Newhoff, somebody who's been on your podcast before. But Kerry's conference presentations, his books, his ideas for church growth, how he facilitates. He is just an incredible leader to watch and to learn from. Reggie Joyner at Orange. I've also had the privilege of seeing him in action, and I'm just in awe of how he can take a biblical idea and just simplify it so eloquently. He's also somebody who raises the value of fun, which few leaders I know, you know, we all talk about it. We all think we're fun people, but Reggie actually goes out of the way to schedule fun and to bring fun into his organization, which is, you know, something I personally would love to do. He raises the value of quality presentation very high, but at the same time, that doesn't come from nowhere. It comes out of an incredible work ethic in terms of preparation and of giving it all he's got. And if you could ever see how Reggie prepares, it's just a lesson in humility. That man works incredibly hard. And I just, you know, I'm so grateful to know him. And then Brad Lominick, former head of Catalyst. He's got a couple of books on leadership out that I've read, really appreciate. He's also been involved with the Rethink Leadership Conference in Atlanta that usually happens in April. Just a incredible thinker, incredible networker, great assembler of leadership ideas. And I'm just grateful to have all those guys in my life right now.
Good deal. Well, I know Brad in particular, he's, you know, on the podcast from time to time. We see him quite a bit in Nashville. And yes, I would definitely echo that endorsement, as well as Carrie. Every single time I talk to Carrie, I get something new that I walk away with and have to chew on. So he's actually speaking at our pipeline conference this year, and looking forward to having him in for that. Okay, so second question is a little bit more. Now we're starting to dig into your business a little bit, but what's your main point of emphasis right now?
Right now, our main point of emphasis, and I would say this is both personal and professional, is something I mentioned earlier when I was talking about Jim Putman and relational discipleship, and that is how do we do life together as disciples? And this is a hard shift for me. I'll just speak for myself, but I think for our organization as well. I grew up on attractional church and performance-based church, where, you know, high values placed on performance and weekend services, you know, quality teaching, quality music, quality media, and also about the, you know, just you know, being attractional and bringing people in. And our challenge thing that we've been working on here these past few years is to shift those values. There's nothing wrong with those values, but for our calling, our specific purpose here at North Shore, we realized that we had a lot of young Christians, but that they really weren't growing up, and that we needed to make a shift towards discipleship, and not just more Bible study. You know, we have plenty of Bible study, but really about how we as a church live together in small environments with each other, and how we're not just here to be taught, but we're here to challenge each other and to be in each other's lives, and basically to weave in and out seamlessly as a staff between the personal and the professional and the spiritual, just to have enough relational capital with each other where there's trust. These are hard things for me personally, because like I said, I think, you know, professionalism, I always just wanted you to bring, I wanted you to have my best. I wanted to bring my best. I didn't want you to have to see, you know, how this sausage was made. I just wanted to bring the sausage to you and say, enjoy it. And part of being real with each other is to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit and let others see how the sausage is made. And if we as leaders don't do this, there's no way our congregation is ever going to do it. And I think that's what's been the hardest for me is, you know, it's one of those things where if it's going to be, it's got to start with me. And I've got to start letting down, you know, not creating a professional edifice, but to say, hey, guys, you know, yeah, all right, this is a strength. And, you know, I'm really happy to lead from that. But here's some challenges that I have, and this is how I'm dealing with it. Or maybe humbly ask somebody to compliment one of those weaknesses in the professional environment, you know, to say, hey, here are some challenges that I'm having in my walk with God. It was never part of the message for me in my formative years to, you know, let your hair down and show your vulnerabilities. It was always, you know, what do you do on Sunday? You put on your best clothes, you shine up the car, you shine up the family, you go, you look great, you sound great. And somebody asks you, how's it going? You say, great. And then, you know, you get your ticket punched and move on for next week. And that's just not how we're doing church anymore. We don't want to do church that way. So finding my way, honestly, has been it's been a challenge and a blessing.
Well, if you could, you know, give an example of how you're doing that as a church and how you're doing that personally.
Sure. Well, as a church, we've made a simple focus, and that is that we want our church to be a church of small groups. Is a simple way to put that, instead of being a church with small groups, meaning that we actually would prefer that our front door of the church be a small group where somebody has invited a neighbor or a coworker to their small group before they've ever invited them to the weekend service. And we know that that's a much less threatening way for somebody to approach church. We live in the Pacific Northwest, which is a very unchurched, almost post-Christian environment. And it's very difficult, you know, more so than other parts of the country, to say, hey, you want to come to this event at our church? I mean, people here don't even have a reference point for church. So, and to say you want to come over for dinner, that's something they can understand. So we're really encouraging people to think of their small groups first. And that within those small groups, you have an intentional leader, which is somebody who takes full responsibility for the spiritual condition of the people in the small group, that he or she knows the condition of the people, where they're at in their spiritual development process, and intentionally helps move them along. So they're an intentional leader in a relational environment, which in this case is in home groups, using a reproducible spiritual development process. And that is being able to identify somebody's growth and be able to help them through it. So, and it's kind of a long answer and a lot to get there, but that is really the direction that we're taking our church. And then for me, what that looks like is I realized that if my staff, I needed to live it out so my staff could live it out, and my staff need to live it out so that our lay leaders and our influencers in our church can live it out, and then ultimately our regular visitors and congregation members. The actual behavior has to start at the very top of the organization. So to that end, I identified several members of our staff who have staff below them, and I did something I've never done, and that is I invited them to a weekly small group meeting at my house. And it was at my house because that I think that's one way to show you who I am and, you know, where I live and how I choose to, you know, to live in my home says something about me. And I would invite them in every week, whether there were dishes in the sink or not, whether the carpet needed to be vacuumed or not. And this was a tremendous challenge for me because, again, I don't want anybody over my house unless my house looks great, yeah, really clean, really straight. And for me, this was an outside metaphor for what I was hoping to do personally, and that is to say, not only am I going to invite you staff members over to my house so you can see how I live, I'm going to invite you into my life more closely than I have before. And I'm going to let you see the dishes in my sink in my own walk with God, or the dirty carpets, you know, in, you know, maybe some of my relationships. Not because I want to, but because I really think that it's important that we, as staff, have those have the freedom with each other to be in each other's lives at that level, and that by you knowing that the boss is okay with it, that you would go and do that for the people under you. But I'm not going to ask you to go and be vulnerable with the people under you until I personally can do that with you.
Well, and I do think that that's an important thing for not only you as a leader, but to model that for your staff and lay leaders, because there are so many people who, you know, again, it's not a new topic of conversation, but, you know, everybody is living comparing themselves to someone else's highlight reel on social or wherever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we bring people into our house and it looks Pinterest worthy, then... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's something wrong with it. And everything, you know, it's like everything is just so, it sends a wrong message, and it's not That's not authentic. And so I think that's a really important thing to draw out of what you just said. Okay, so let's move to the next question and talk about obstacles. You may have talked about obstacles a little bit, but what obstacles are you currently facing in your church or with you personally right now?
Sure. Sure. Well, just want to share my personal story. I have been the executive producer, executive pastor here. I was an executive producer at one time too. executive pastor here at the church now for 11 years. And that's a good long run. And I love our church. I love my job. I love being here, but I want to make sure that I'm staying fresh. And after 11 years of doing anything, that can be a bit of a challenge. I've spent the last couple of years just reflecting on this, and I've had a few thoughts on it that I'd share with you. One is that even if you have the same position and title, you don't always have the same job. And as that applied to me, I came from the business world, and the church had grown very quickly. It needed systems, it needed budget, it needed HR, it needed a lot of the stuff that I with credibility could bring. And for the first few years, that's primarily what we worked on, was our systems and structures and policies and guidelines. And it was a great way to come in. The church was very gracious to allow me to come in and work in my areas of strength. It didn't overwhelm me with a lot of pastoral stuff at first, but it also allowed me to lead a staff of pastors with who I was, and not having, I would never pretend to be as, you know, educated or experienced as our pastors were in their area of expertise. So that worked really well for, you know, the first year, you know, for a few years. But then I realized that I had another job, even though I had the same title and I was in the same office working for the same organization. Our school began to grow at a very quick rate, and we needed to expand our building space. So for the next few years, I had to learn about buildings and about financially engineering buildings before they can be built, and then about building buildings themselves and contractors. And it was a deep, rich experience. Even though I was still doing some of the system stuff, I was learning in a whole new area. And then after a few more years, those buildings were built. And it was a time when my senior pastor really felt called to the discipleship path that we've been talking about earlier. And now my job was more of a spiritual leadership position, and that was to take the senior pastor's directive and to make it reality within the church body. And by this time, I had developed enough relational capital with the people around me that once again, you know, thank you to, you know, North Shore. They allowed me the bandwidth to come in and lead more from a spiritual perspective. So it's not enough to get hung up if you're in a job, one job in one place. It's not really fair to say, well, you know, I've only had one job and done one thing for, you know, for 11 years. Now, you actually can have several positions within the same position if you are willing to raise your hand and to take on some different responsibilities and challenges as they come along.
And if you're leading and growing, I mean, that just seems like a natural progression. If that isn't happening, then there might be something wrong.
Yeah. I mean, if you're literally doing the same things that you were, you know, 10 years ago in a leadership position, you probably need to look and say, you know, did we not nail that problem, or are we not, you know, looking broad enough for some other opportunities? But I would let it both, you know, let it be a canary in the coal mine for you, but also by shifting responsibilities, you know, year to year, you'll stay fresh that way. Another thing that I think is important to staying fresh is to think of yourself as a lifelong learner. I just get so recharged by reading books and blogs and podcasts. Just exposing myself to new ideas. Sometimes I think, you know, there's a tendency after we do a job for a while to say, well, you know, I kind of got it. You know, I've got this thing nailed. By doing these things, it challenges your thinking. And here's probably the biggest point in all of this about staying fresh. Expose yourself to different thinking. What I learned was, you know, like I said, our church size is about 1,500, but this doesn't matter whether your church is, you know, 50 or 5,000, the same thing applies. I can be with people who are run about the same size church that I do, and I'll learn something from them. I learn so much more when I go and I talk to people who are in that next level up. And in our case, that would be a church of about 4,000. When I hang out with guys who think about churches of 4,000 or churches of, you know, 10 plus thousand, I'm hearing an entirely different way of thinking. And it is so valuable because, one, it exposes me to areas that I need to work on, that I need to understand better. And two, it helps me get ideas on how to take our church to those next levels and how to think differently. So I would just encourage everybody out there, if you've been in a job for a little while, read, listen to podcasts, check out social media, network with other people who bring new ideas into your life and challenge it.
What's two books that you've read so far this year that you're like, man, that really brought a new insight or perspective?
Well, one was Do Over by John Acuff.
Yep.
He has a quote on the jacket, and it's right above everything else, and it's from Seth Godin. It says, "The best career book ever written." And I'm like, wow, this had better be a good book, because that is quite a claim. And it delivered. Man, I just love John's humor. I love his perspective. He's very he tells his personal tales in a very authentic way, some of them which I imagine are a little hard to tell. But he does it. And he really just sort of challenged my thinking, and I think most readers would agree that it's really not your typical career advice, but it really has to do with about how you're thinking about your situation. And then along those same lines, a book that's been out for a little while, and it's called Creative Followership. And it's from a guy named Jimmy Collins, who was the past president of Chick-fil-A.
Excellent. Well, let's move into your home. You've already kind of shared with me that you're becoming an empty nester. So I'm not sure whether to congratulate you or what to do.
Well,
I still have a 7, 5, and just turned 4-year-old. So I think I'm a ways off from that.
Yeah.
But talk to us a little bit about what leadership looks like in your home.
Sure. Well, enjoy the ages of your kids. What a blessing that at those ages, and they still, for the most part, love mom and dad. And I'm very happy for you, Todd, and your house. The changes in our house, I'm one of those guys who, you know, we got married and we were going to have kids, and everybody kept saying the same thing to me. You know, the time with your kids goes fast. You know, time with your kids goes fast. I'm like, I'm sorry, there is no way 20 years is ever going to go fast. These kids are going to be here until Jesus comes back. I mean, they're never going to leave my home. It wasn't even a point of reference for me. I just felt like I just couldn't see 20 years with kids ever leaving. So, but I did take their advice, and, you know, we used to play golf, used to be really involved in the community with Rotary. And those are great things that I did that I love, but they're also heavily time consuming. So I decided when our kids were born that I was going to drop golf and some of this community involvement and just focus on, you know, home and work and church. And that was going to have to suffice. And I was gonna take that time that I might have spent out on the golf course and spend it with my kids, just going out and doing fun stuff. And I'm so glad now that I did, because the 20 years has gone way faster than anybody would have thought. It's almost a shock that the kids are gone. I loved the years that I spent with them. And for me, the idea of having them leave is very difficult. So I know I talked to some parents who are like, hey, this is great, man. They're out. I got plenty of room. I can, you know, I can convert their rooms into something else. And, you know, it's and that's great. You know, but for me, there's a almost more of a mourning period. So, you know, I'm just going to give myself this year to adjust. It's not that we've lost our kids. It's just that our role has changed from, you know, sort of the commander of the house when they're little, that's what they need, to where they are today. And they really need more of a coach or maybe a consultant. And they just need our help in you know, adult world stuff, you know, like, you know, managing money and securing internships and crashing classes. And, you know, those are all things that we can help them with. But I need to back away and let them be the, you know, the wonderful young adults that they are. So I'm going to give myself a year really to try to figure that out and not, you know, they say anytime you have a big life change, give your, you know, don't do anything crazy for a year. So I really don't anticipate doing anything crazy in a year, but I'm not going to pressure myself into, you know, somehow pretending that having nobody at home, just me and my wife, that isn't something that takes a while to get used to. And, I think there's some good things. You know, I've been able to reassess time that I can spend on my blog and on reading and personal education. I touched on that a minute ago. My wife and I are talking about what we can do with the gift of hospitality, because, you know, we do have empty room that we didn't have before. So maybe when missionaries come through town, you know, we might be able to extend our place to, you know, for them to come and stay. And, you know, we're talking about how we might use the space for, you know, just for something greater than, you know, a bunch of empty rooms. And we've always tried to open our place up to events and things. And I think we'll have the ability to have more events at our home, you know, church related events than what we've had in the past. So, you know, and also, you know, how you lead, from a spiritual standpoint, I feel that the most important disciples that I'll ever make are my children, and, they're launched, you know, they're in college and they're attending their own Christian circles now. And I'm very grateful for that. So, you know, while, you know, my wife and I still have responsibilities to each other spiritually as spouses, you know, what does that do to my capacity to, now make focus more outside the home and making disciples than maybe what it's been.
Good deal. All right. Well, we're now rounding the bases. We're coming home.
All right.
So what is, if you could go back, and you have a 20-year-old, am I right?
I do. Be 21 very soon.
Well, share with us, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
I would tell my 20-year self that it is not just about results, but that it's about results and people. And I didn't realize it when I was 20, but I had a lot of influences that were command and control. So there's a lot of top down stuff that I had seen in my life. So it was, hey, it's the boss telling people what to do to get the job done. All right. I understand that, but you know, that isn't really the way the world works anymore. It might have at one time. But it really is about people and getting the job done through people and, you know, work with people and say, hey, this is the result that the organization needs, but don't tell them how to do it. Give them the authority and the responsibility to make sure that result happens. If it doesn't, you can go back and you can follow up with people. But I'll tell you, it very rarely do people really let me down. I mean, I'm not going to say that it never happens, but good, you know, the world is full of good people who generally really do want to do a good job. And most of them are smart enough to figure it out. That's why you hired them. So hire good people, set proper parameters and proper direction on the table, and then stand back, watch them do it, support them along the way, hold them accountable, you know, for the results at the end. But it's really a much nicer way to, you know, care and support your people. This way I look at my job is someone who's primarily here to care and support people as they carry out the mission. And the other thing that I would have told myself is the power of networking. I just didn't understand this, and networking is where ideas come from, support comes from, challenge comes from, jobs come from. And, you know, everybody looks, you know, how do you get a job? Well, you go look at the job postings and you apply. Well, you can, but really only about 10 to 20% of jobs in America get filled that way. The rest of them get filled because of connection. And it's, you know, networking doesn't have to be big and scary and, you know, awkward moments over mixers. I mean, you can just be reaching out to people that you admire and speaking with them, and it can be going to conferences and shaking hands, and it's networking is a lot more natural and organic and human than maybe the way that it's portrayed sometimes. So definitely just hire good people and give them the tools to do their job. Hold them accountable for the task, but, you know, give them lots of space and support meantime, and network with other people. And I know if I'd known those two things, my 20s would have been better.
You know, what you've described as networking, I would say it's the reason why we're talking today. It's because networking is more than just, you know, smiling, shaking hands, being an extrovert or something like that. At the end of the day, I think it's adding value to people. So it is a reciprocal relationship of sharing ideas or, you know, on social media, it might be sharing other people's content, you know, whatever that mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. I think over the course of time, it really, you can quickly tell when you're being worked in networking mm-hmm. versus when there's, you know, some mutual respect, admiration, you know, you're adding value to each other. I think that's a really important thing to bring out. And simply for that reason, that's why we're talking. Every time I've seen you on Twitter or some other social site or, you know, the blog, you're constantly adding value. You're curating great content as well as creating great content. And that's a special thing. So very glad to have had you on today. And I know Barnabas will have missed you, but thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Titus, it's been a privilege. Thank you.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.